Fixing hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to a NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part 2.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, the worldwide leader in hiring some of your favorite people, maybe, to be on television to talk about hockey, but I can't talk about it because I've been explicitly told probably I shouldn't.
Well, I'm Ryan Lambert from EP Ringside. I don't know. That's it. I'm not hiring anybody, I don't think.
Oh, come on.
I don't know.
Those bushels of EP Ringside subscriber cash, you're not going to be going headhunting?
Yeah, I guess not.
Oh, okay.
Sean McNew from The Athletic. We're always hiring.
That's fucking true. You're in puck soup. You hire for things at The Athletic that I didn't even know The Athletic needed. It's like, you know, Myrtle will tweet out, "We're looking for a nuclear physicist." And then, like, you know, a billion people put in their resumes.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So Jack Eichel talked to the media this week.
Oh, I didn't hear about this.
No, yeah, it did happen. Yeah, it did. He obviously did the thing that we all expected, which was expressing disappointment in the direction of the Buffalo Sabres. But then, uh-oh, plot twist. He's also really upset at them for medical malfeasance, which we didn't expect. He apparently wants to get a surgery done to fix a herniated disc in his neck. The Sabres don't agree with the path that he wants to take. And as Jack Eichel said, I'm under contract with the Buffalo Sabres and they hold all the cards. Now, this would be the tipping point on top of the tipping point. And you have to assume that Jack Eichel's time in Buffalo would be done. So do you think Jack Eichel's time in Buffalo is done, Ryan Lambert?
I don't think you say everything he said and not get traded at the end of that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I would agree with that.
I don't think it's a sure thing, but I wasn't convinced that it was even a likely thing that he would get moved this summer right up until I saw those comments, and that certainly swung the needle pretty firmly into the he's going to get moved category. I think that was pretty obviously calculated to make that happen.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's certainly something where if that's what's being said publicly, you can kind of imagine what the behind-the-scenes conversations are like.
Oh, yeah.
And if that's the case, then it makes sense. It probably, I mean, certainly I don't think any of us can blame Jack Eichel for wanting a fresh start. And it probably makes sense for the Sabres to do it. Now, if it comes to one side or the other backing out of this, it's going to be the Sabres side. I don't think Jack Eichel is going to change his mind over the course of the next couple months and go, you know what, I want to stick around. But the piece of this that we do have to mention is Jack Eichel's got 5 years left on his contract.
Right.
So he can want to leave, but he doesn't have much right. leverage to make that happen unless he's willing to go one step further or a few steps further and say, I'm not playing here anymore. I will sit at home. You can keep my paychecks, and I'm my next NHL game will not be for the Buffalo Sabres under any circumstances. And that used to happen all the time in the NHL. It hasn't happened very much lately. In fact, off the top of my head, I can't remember it happening for somebody who was under contract. Like we've seen Jacob Trouba and
contract
and guys like that where they didn't have a contract. But, you know, to say I'm going to sit at home, I'm going to basically hold out, that would be the next step. Or to say I'm going to behave in such a way that I'm going to be such a distraction that I'm poison and you don't want to have me around. That's the piece where I say probably instead of definitely, because we haven't seen many players lately be willing to cross that line. And if Jack Eichel isn't, then he only has so much leverage to force something if the Sabres either don't want to move him, if they want to be stubborn, or if they're willing to move him and they just don't get the offers that they feel make sense for them.
I'm typically a guy that says if you sign a deal, you should honor it. Like, you kind of know what you're getting into. I had that opinion when Connor signed his deal and there was all this talk about him, like, trying to get out of Edmonton lickety-split. I'm torn on this one, though, because, like, although he did sign a deal with the Buffalo Sabres, knowing they're the Buffalo Sabres, he signed it in October 2017. That's a pretty decent clip to have still been, you know, that's three seasons now on top of the seasons he already spent on his rookie deal. And they've not made the playoffs once. And it's the dysfunction that makes me feel a little bit differently about this than other situations. It's like the fact that he's had four coaches and three general managers in that space.
Right. I was going to say, it's not even the dysfunction. It's that the dysfunction keeps getting worse. It's not getting better. You know what I mean? Like, you know, when, to your point earlier about McDavid, when he signed, that was like a thing of like, oh, we better get our shit together. You know, like the organization as a whole was like they kind of took those rumblings seriously about, yeah, like Connor McDavid might want out if we don't get our acts together ASAP. So let's do that.
Yeah.
Whereas the Buffalo Sabres have shown no indication that they have any interest in doing that, like from ownership down. You know, I don't know what's next. And like,
there's,
you know,
there's no plan at all. Like,
well,
that's
well, right. But also, you. Yeah. if you're Jack Eichel and they're also like, oh, you want to get that surgery? Fuck off. You can't get that surgery. Like, yeah, why would he be like, oh, I don't like have like kind of medical autonomy here, and also the team sucks and has no sign of getting better in the near future? Yeah, see you later.
I've been trying to understand the Sabres' perspective on this, and I think that you're right. It's like, on the one hand, no, you're not going to have you get experimental surgery because you might not even be here next year. And then it's like, two, we're also not going to let you have experimental surgery because we're trying to trade you. Like, you know.
And here's the other thing with that. Because I just said, right, like, for Jack Eichel to force his way out of Buffalo, he has to essentially do something that nobody that I can remember in the cap era has ever done, which is say, I've got years left of my contract, but I'm not playing for this team. I'm going to hold out the way that stars used to do. The whole surgery thing, you can look at it two ways. One is you could say, this is exactly the sort of issue that could tip this situation into that territory. Because if there really is a significant dispute over his medical treatment, that goes beyond I'm sick of losing. That goes beyond
I'm coach.
The other way to look at it is potentially Jack Eichel already knows he might be headed towards that direction of saying I'm done with this team, and putting this out there now frames it a little bit better, because I think you've already seen it, right, this week. There's a lot of fans out there that have just no patience at all for any player who doesn't want to be anywhere. You know, it's okay, he's going to quit, he's going to walk, he's this little whiny baby, he doesn't want to play anymore, blah, blah, blah. That's mostly Sabres fans, granted, but seems to be a lot of fans of other teams too. And if you frame it as, you know, also there's this, I'm not being treated right from a medical perspective, that makes it a little bit easier. Because if Jack Eichel says, I'm done with the Sabres, with 5 years left in my contract, he's going to get hammered from every corner. From fans, from the 200 hockey men, from anonymous executives at other teams that'll start questioning his character. Like, he knows that. This kind of maybe greases the slide just a little bit, that he can do that in a way. It's sort of a not a bad plan B maybe to have in your pocket if you're on Team Michael trying to figure out how the next few months plays out. So that's one thought on that. But the other piece of this is, like, the last time we did a big chunk of a Jack Eichel podcast, was
our monthly Jack Eichel podcast.
Yeah, it was, yeah, well, it was kind of like
on this podcast. It's either every 2 weeks we talk about Tom Wilson, or every 2 weeks we talk about Jack Eichel. Those
if
are your
Tom Wilson
options.
Ever injures Jack Eichel, we will
forget
just
it.
Do a week long.
Yeah. I've been considering changing the name of the podcast to Jack and Tom. Is that not cool, or
that's fine?
Is that kind of gross, or okay?
Yeah, a little bit. The last time we did this, it was before the deadline, and we were like, we were thinking of where would he get traded and who would they get traded. We had the argument over the Devils and Jack Hughes and everything, and we were saying they would be crazy. Every team would be crazy not to get this guy. Here we are a few months later. The fact that he's had a significant neck injury does change the equation a little bit. Like, I do feel like there's now, in a sense, is, you know, among everything else they've got to deal with, this is a terrible time for the Sabres to make this deal, because every team is going to be like, oh, I don't know, heard about that neck problem. I don't know if maybe we've got to nudge the offer down a couple of levels, and it's just one more thing. But I do find, like, back in March or whenever it was, when you heard someplace, some fans or media or whoever would say, ah, we don't need Jack Eichel on this team. It was like, you're crazy. You've got to go and get this guy if he's available. I'm not completely sure that's the case anymore, or at the very least, I think you got to revise a little bit, given that he had a significant injury, and it sounds like the path forward from it is not clear at all.
And to your point, though, like, I think the malcontent thing still plays a little bit. I mean, I'm happy that the Jack Hughes thing became a meme, but one of the point of the Jack Hughes things was that you don't take Jack Eichel from the Buffalo Sabres and put him on the Devils. You don't take Jack Eichel from the Buffalo Sabres and put him on the Coyotes. You know, there are certain teams out there that could make the focal point of their franchise Jack Eichel, but, like, why would you do that? Why would you have a guy who is clearly miserable in a situation where he's missing the playoffs constantly and is worried about success on the ice, and put him in a situation where there isn't? So that's why I find it interesting that there is a ticking time bomb here for the Sabres towards them having trade protection, not this summer, but next summer.
Next summer. But July 1st, which gives them the draft and everything still to work with.
But at the same time, like, I still think that he controls his destiny in some ways. Like, it's clear that there are teams in this league that know they don't want to trade for Jack Eichel because they're not going to be able to offer anything beyond what the Sabres are offering right now insofar as, like, upward mobility.
Yeah. So I do think, though, there's a change of scene. Like, any place for him might be better than Buffalo right now. And maybe
I would agree
one
with that.
Or two teams we could point to. But I think even some, because the fact is, you know, the Devils or whoever, let's just say, just by the act of trading for Jack Eichel will be signaling that, hey, we're expecting more success in the near term than otherwise. But yeah, again, like, people keep mentioning that no trade clause that kicks in next year. And they're like, that's the Sabres have got to do it now.
No.
It's a no-trade clause. It's not a must-trade clause. Yeah. He doesn't get to say, like, you have to trade me now because my clause kicked in and here's where I want to go. So,
well, it would become the Taylor Hall situation where he's like, well, I want to go to the New York Rangers. And the New York Rangers are like, great, you can have Ryan Lindgren and a third-round pick.
Yeah, except it's not the Taylor Hall situation, because Taylor Hall was months away from unrestricted free agency. So it was either trade me to where I want to go or I'm gone for nothing. Jack Eichel, if he goes, I only want to go to the Rangers next year, the Sabres go, that's great. You have 4 years left on your contract, so you're playing for us. I mean, it's not remotely the same as even a guy like Sam Reinhardt, right? Who's the other apparently disgruntled
Brady,
player. Like,
from what
his contract, yeah, Brady, according to some, his contract runs out next year. Now, he's an RFA, so he's not, he doesn't get to walk, but he at least can say, I'm not signing a new deal here. Trade me now, or else next year I'm not putting pen to paper on another contract with you guys. At which point things get messy and you got to figure it out. But he's got more leverage than Eichel does, just in terms of his contract situation. Eichel's got virtually none unless he wants to create some.
That was my favorite thing of the week, by the way, was the fact that, like, Eichel's like, I want out of here, and Reinhardt's like, I want out of here. And Ruotsalainen's like, yeah, I want out of here too. And the Sabres are like, we tried.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted you.
Yeah. It is, like, when you think about it, though, it is funny because it's, you mentioned Taylor Hall. Like, here's Jack Eichel, and he's like, I'm sick of losing. I'm never in the playoffs. I don't like this. I want to go somewhere and win. And it feels like half the league is like, ooh, red flag. Right there, red flag.
Right, yeah. Right.
And meanwhile, Taylor Hall signs with the Sabres, and everyone's like, ooh, red flag. What, does this guy not want to win? He doesn't want to be someplace where he can have a big play. And it's like, these guys can't win with some of these.
Yeah, no, they're on the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah. yes. That's why I said Taylor Hall is one of the guys I'm rooting for in the playoffs, because that's some supervillain shit. I mean, like, the idea of, like, you got your you secured your bag, and you went to a team that gave you a no-move clause. You're able to control your future, go to where you wanted to go anyway, and audition for another contract with that team. It's fucking – it's genius. It's
boy,
like 40
that,
chess.
Boy, has anything ever felt as inevitable as Taylor Hall signing for less than market value?
With the Boston Bruins?
With the Boston Bruins? yeah, Jesus Christ.
So let's pivot to like what the market could be. I hate to ever agree with anything that Larry Brooks writes, says, or does in life. But he wrote a piece this week that I thought was interesting, which is, would the other path for the Rangers, in which they keep Zibanejad, in which they keep some of the young assets they'd inevitably have to give up for Eichel, and focus their energies into trying to find, and I know this is going to sound fucking Brooksian and Rangers towny, but find their Messier-esque kind of guy to tie together a young team versus Eichel? Like, would that be the better path for them than breaking up half the roster for Jack Eichel?
Well, who's that guy?
That's a great question, and I don't know the answer.
I don't think there is such a guy.
Because the problem is, like, in theory, that makes sense. The problem is twofold in terms of what's changed since they found their original Messier. Is, first of all, it's much harder to pry star players in their prime away from small market teams than it used to be. Not impossible, but it's not like it was 30 years ago, where the Oilers just couldn't keep anybody, and so the big markets just came and plucked all the stars off. And then the other thing is the idea of a guy in his prime. Like, Mark Messier was, like,
in his prime, yeah,
like 30 when he got traded. But people were still like, and he comes over and wins the MVP. Whereas these days, anyone who's established that reputation, there's maybe a small handful of guys that are 25.
There's like five guys. Here's the guys, and none of them are probably getting traded.
Yeah.
And they're not even in that prime that Messier was. Sid, Bergeron, right? Mm-hmm. Who else would it be?
Taves
when healthy, absolutely. Because that's to be guys that have won or come close to winning, right?
Yeah.
O'Reilly?
Kopitar maybe would be.
Yeah.
Yeah, O'Reilly. Like, yeah. But none of these guys are in the same – that's not the same category. First of all, you're right. None of those absolutely. Guys that we just mentioned are getting moved. But
– oh, fuck.
Yeah,
man, If I had the Rangers roster or the Kings roster and I added O'Reilly, oh, shit. Let's go. I'd love that. That's the guy. That'd be my Messier-esque guy. That's
and
like
by
a
the way,
bit younger.
Just speaking of him, how funny is it to see people who are like, oh, I don't know, man, what are you going to do, trade for the Sabres guy? Like, you really think that you want to bring in, you want to bring in an unhappy Buffalo Sabre? You think you're going to, like, what, win the cup the next year with that guy? Yeah, you're right, man. That's crazy. That would never happen.
Well,
good point.
So you're the Rangers. And let's say that the Sabres come to you and they're like, all right, you can get Eichel for sure. We need Lafreniere, Keandre, something else for Eichel. Like a one and something else for Eichel. You do that?
I have that conversation.
Yeah.
I try to drive it down. I try to get them to take Apo Kakko instead of Lafreniere. I try to do a few things. But yeah, I'm not hanging up the phone when Kevin Adams starts that conversation.
Yeah, because that's what the conversation is. Like, do you want Jack Eichel or not? Is basically what it boils down to. And if you're hanging up the phone when he said, well, then yeah, you're not getting Jack Eichel, and maybe that's fine.
If you like, I mean, I saw Brooks saying, like, you know, Mika Zibanejad's better than Jack Eichel anyway. I was like,
well, that's not true at all.
Yeah, no. Well, right, of course. But, like, you know, if you feel like Mika Zibanejad is really good, which of course he is, maybe you don't really need a Jack Eichel necessarily. But then again, it's the classic shit of, like, well, you don't like the opportunity to acquire a Jack Eichel type doesn't come along every day.
And that's Ryan, that's actually a really good point, which is that
I know that.
Okay, thank you, motherfucker. just take the compliment once in a while. You don't have to, like, put it on a billboard. But it was a good point. Let me expand on that.
Yeah.
So if you have Zibanejad and you think he's as good as he is, and he's quite good, the thing that makes the Rangers interesting is the Panarin part of it, which is, if you look back to, like, Chicago, right? Like, if you have a great center in Taves, you don't need another one because you've got a winger in the form of Kane and then eventually in the form of Panarin that drives his own line, that acts like a center on his line. That you could put Strome and whoever the fuck with him, and it's going to be a great line. You know what I mean? So, like, you have two really good play-driving players already on that roster. The necessity's not there to get Eichel, but obviously you are a better team with Eichel.
Yeah, I mean,
you're a better team. That's a GM's job. Make your team better. I'm maybe not surprised, but the amount of both fans and media that I've seen immediately talking themselves out of even getting in on this guy surprises me. Like, yeah. I don't know if that's a Eichel-specific thing or if it's just the time. We at The Athletic, we had a thing where they got the beat writer for every single team to say, would their team be in on him and what would it look like? And it was so conservative. How many and these are the writers who are around the team in a lot of cases are talking to the front office. Like, they have a really good sense of what the thinking is. So I don't think it wasn't getting pulled out of nowhere. But just immediately going like, well, maybe, but here's the seven guys that are untouchable and here's the and you're just sitting there going like, what happened? Like, it used to be, and it feels like in every other sport, if a star player is available, it's like, let's go crazy thinking about how we can get this guy.
Right. Yes.
And in hockey, it just immediately becomes, okay, now that it might actually happen, how do we talk ourselves out of even getting any interest in this?
Yep. I think part of it's a function of the cap. By the way, my favorite part of that article was that Kevin Kurz from San Jose had to contribute to it. And be like, of course they'd love Jack Eichel. It's just never going to happen because of all the other contracts they've got on their books. It was good. The LA part of it's really interesting too, and Ryan, maybe you can speak to this better than Sean and I can, as far as, like, their conundrum is that their best prospects haven't even gotten significant time in the league yet. Turcotte, right. and you know, Byfield got a cameo this year. So the Rangers at least have a little bit of proof of concept on Kako, on Keandre, on Lafreniere. Yeah. The Kings don't even know what the fuck they have in a guy like Turcotte.
I think we don't know what we have might be a more appealing than 2 years of Kako scoring single-digit goals. It's kind of the mystery box approach.
But you mean from a Buffalo perspective?
Yes, from a Buffalo perspective.
Okay, I would agree.
That might be an easier sell. And then, look, here's the other piece of this, which is kind of the elephant in the room, which is everything that just happened in New York last week, 15 seconds after we finished recording the podcast, where you know, they fire everybody, they bring in Chris Drury, and the owner basically says, I did this because the rebuild isn't moving fast enough. So if you're Chris Drury, are you sitting there objectively looking at this going, well, I have these prospects, this guy's going to be this good in 3 years, do I make a move for Jack Eichel now? Or do you have James Dolan behind you going, go get that star? And James Dolan, remember, he's the NBA guy, right?
Yeah.
And what happens in the NBA? What happens in the NBA, right? Stars become available, and you go and get that star if you want to win anything. And yes, of course, the NBA is very, very different as far as the impact that one player can have, et cetera, et cetera. I know that. You know that. I'm not completely convinced James Dolan knows that. If he's standing behind Chris Drury saying, this is the – Jack Eichel is going to be the best player, the best trade asset to become available in years in the NHL. If James Dolan is sitting there going, we are New York, go get this guy.
Yep.
Then it really doesn't matter what you want to do. If you're Chris Drury, you might feel like you've got to do this. And then the question becomes, if Chris Drury knows that, does Kevin Adams know that? Does Chris Drury know that Kevin Adams knows that? And back and forth it goes, and it becomes, it's very rare. Usually in these moves, you need lots of teams bidding against each other. And the conventional wisdom is if there's only one team you're talking to, then you're screwed. Maybe not in this case, if that one team, like I say, the James Dolan factor here is hard to understate if it exists at all, and we don't know if it does or not.
And I don't want to jump the line on the Rangers talk, because we'll talk about them in a second, but there's also the fact that Drury and Eichel share an agent. There's also the fact that Drury has a unique understanding of the Buffalo franchise as well. I mean, there's a lot of
Rangers
things there.
Rangers' current coach, is Jack Eichel's college
coach. Yeah, for sure. Two teams that fascinate me, though, about Eichel. One is, and they're both teams that have been in a constant search for that star center. One is Minnesota, which they'd have to make the money work, and may not necessarily have the treasure of assets that Buffalo would want. But my God, you talk about a team that could get that could, you know, use Jack Eichel to codify a scoring line for the next four or 5 years. It would be that team. And then, of course, as I've said in a few places, my ultimate dream is Vegas gets upended in the first round by St. Louis or Minnesota. Bill Foley freaks out and carves up his entire roster to go get Jack Eichel because, quote, you know, they've tried to get the wingers, they tried to get the goalie, they tried to get the defenseman, and now they're going to get the center. That's my dream.
Yep, those are good ones. I'll just say this on Minnesota. I feel like Minnesota makes so much sense.
Yeah.
But it makes sense right now. Like, this is the perfect time for the Minnesota Wild to talk themselves into this because the playoffs haven't started yet. And I just look at it's like a Schrodinger's box sort of thing where we know the Wild are good, but we don't know yet what's happened in the playoffs. And so Jack Eichel makes a ton of sense. But if they go out there and they get blown out in the first round, suddenly you're sitting there going, are the Wild really that close? Does it actually make sense to go and get a Jack Eichel when they just lost in the first round? And if they go on a run, especially in that division, you're sitting there going, well, we don't need Jack Eichel. We just had what we've got now is working. We're not going to disrupt this successful roster to go and get this guy. So I just feel like whatever happens the next few weeks, the Wild are not going to feel like it makes as much sense as it does right now in this moment.
Mm-hmm. Now, is Schrodinger's box where Schrodinger's cat That's defecates?
Right. All right. Sure, yeah.
There, okay. All right. Wild, interesting. Vegas, interesting. Lambert, do you have any teams that you want Jack Eichel on?
Not real. You know, not Buffalo is a great option for me. But like the thing that's so funny to me, like Sean said, is like especially everybody in Edmonton. Like, look, we already got Dreisaitl and McDavid, and it's like, yeah, Dreisaitl doesn't play center like half the time because they feel like, oh no, if we, you know, we're not getting enough goals, blah blah blah. And so, like, I don't know. I just feel like, If I'm a team that's like, oh, you know what we have enough of is good players, like just game changing players. We're stocked up. Like that mindset is so fucking baffling to me. But
especially when you see some of the teams that are saying this, like we're good, we're deep at center, and you're just looking at the roster going, did you guys make a move that you didn't tell the rest of us about? Because
yeah.
Feel like you could
obviously. Obviously, like, you know, I think everybody's kind of if he doesn't go to the Rangers, they're going to figure out a way to he's going to figure out a way to force his way to the Bruins is kind of on a lot of people's minds. Because, again, you know, he's from Massachusetts and went to BU and all that shit. And, you know, if David Krejci, you know, doesn't stick around or even maybe retires because he's, whatever, 34, 35 years old. Like,
Yeah, well, okay, that's a lot of money suddenly freed up, and yep. maybe something happens there. I don't know. But, like, God, can you fucking imagine if, like, he's, like, the heir apparent to Bergeron and Krejci?
It would be insane.
Well, Boston makes a lot of sense. The other team, I mean, the Kings obviously have got the ammo. We mentioned them. The other team that I think about is the Ducks, because they've got a lot of prospects. They've definitely, if the Sabres wanted to make a for-the-future deal, I feel like Anaheim could pair up with them. The cap could work. There'd be challenges like there are for any team. And it feels like there's some, like, the Ducks are rebuilding, but they're kind of not. And it just feels like Bob Murray,
there's
some frustration where it's like
I think your point's a good one, which is that if the Ducks aren't rebuilding, they're just, like, dormant. And if you're dormant, then bringing in Jack Eichel may activate all the pieces that are still there, you know, like Raquel and Silverberg and all the defensemen. Like, it's the strangest fucking situation I've ever seen, where a team that clearly should rebuild isn't. And why is that?
And,
do you know what I mean?
And why is it? But also, like, you've got, you think, a very good goalie in his prime, but, you know, it's, do you try to build around that? Eric Stevens in on The Athletic said he's the Ducks guy, and he said that he didn't think they would be in, and he did mention that internal budget, like not the cap, but just how much they're willing to spend given everything in the last year, like, could come into play, and that's a really good point. So, I mean, if he doesn't think they're in, then I certainly would imagine that he's right. But it just, in terms of lining up the pieces, that's a team that I don't hear mentioned very often, that I feel like could potentially be a situation where, because remember, they've got Getzlaf coming off the cap. He'll probably be back, but he's not going to be back for $8.5 million. There would be ways to make that work assuming Buffalo wants to do a picks and prospects trade, which I don't think is guaranteed. It's also possible Kevin Adams might say, look, I want another 24-year-old star player, and we're just going to do a hockey deal, or we're going to do something that's largely based around that. And
that's why it's so mind-numbing. Like, if you deal players off your roster, you're diminished. If you deal Zegras or Drysdale, which you'll probably have to do to get him, you're diminished, like, going forward. I don't know. I understand how trades work.
That's like everybody is saying, like, well, but then, you know, if we get Jack Eichel, that'd be good, but we'd have to give up. Yeah, it's a trade, man. Like, you would have to give some stuff up.
No, I understand that, but, like, to what end? Like, Minnesota could trade a bunch of things
for Eichel.
Like
better.
You said, you could roll and try to win a cup, right? The Ducks are nowhere near a cup now, and then you could end up not being anywhere near a cup for the rest of his contract. Like, I don't know. I'm very intrigued by them because they seem to be having some plan that doesn't sync up with their on-ice success. And maybe it is a waiting for Eichel situation. But anyways, I mean, wherever he is, I just want to see the dude in a different jersey next year. I'm tired of seeing him in Buffalo. He needs a wardrobe refresh. Speaking of your wardrobe refresh.
That's fine. It's okay.
Mack Weldon is a premium men's essentials brand that believes in smart designs and high-quality fabrics. I am wearing their underwear right now, and let me tell you, it is the epitome of comfort. From socks and shirts and hoodies, underwear, polos, and active shorts, Mack Weldon promises comfort and a consistent fit. They're versatile. They've got incredible wide range of fabrics, including customized fabrics that can keep up with you no matter what your day looks like. And they've also have a free loyalty program. Level 1 gets you free shipping for life. And once you reach level 2, by spending $200, Mack Weldon gives you 20% off of every order for the next year. Wow. Now, for 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com/puck. MackWeldon.com/puck. And then enter the promo code PUCK. That's for 20% off your first order. Again, this stuff is super comfy. Summer is almost here. You're going to want some lightweight polos, gentlemen, to wear to those fancy occasions where you can't just show up in your ratty old poison t-shirt that you wear around the house, Sean.
Guns N' Roses, man. Come on.
Well, I figured you'd wear the Guns N' Roses shirt out.
That's my formal wear. The poison shirt's your loungewear. Right.
That's MacWeldon.com/puck. Enter promo code PUCK for 20% off your first order. Thanks to our friends at MacWeldon for sponsoring the podcast. We mentioned the Rangers situation just earlier. Obviously, that happened like 30 seconds after the show published last week, where Jeff Gorton and team president John Davidson were no longer with the team. And Chris Drury takes over as the general manager and president. We've probably all written about this and talked about it in the last week, but what are your you know, week later thoughts on this, Ryan?
Yeah, I think the real concern for the Rangers is that they've become the new thing that Jim Dolan focuses on, right? Like, if that's the case, ask any fucking Knicks fan. That sucks. You don't want that to be happen. Like, you don't want – for many, many years, the Rangers were the team that Dolan owned but didn't really notice or get involved with all that much.
Yep. He was the perfect NHL owner.
Yeah,
because money, just, and he didn't see him.
Yep, sign the checks and shut the fuck up. That's the ultimate thing that you want out of any owner, and well, now not, maybe not so much. The revelation that the letter came from him, like I think that's a classic situation where the NHL fucked up, because if Dolan is like paying attention to you. Like if that decision not to suspend Tom Wilson is what made Dolan be a more hands-on manager of the New York Rangers, that's bad for the NHL. Full stop. So I think that's the real issue here is just like they may have woken a sleeping dragon, and it's a sleeping dragon who's going to demand that they trade everything they can for fucking like Matt Martin types.
because the Knicks are finally good, not an embarrassment at least.
That's, so it's yeah,
like,
that's
now about Dolan's right. Like, nailed it. Look at that. I knew I was super good at this sports thing. All right, what else? Move on to fix the Rangers. Yeah. I would be very worried if I was a Rangers fan right
you know,
now.
There was a thing where some people were like, oh, it's because they didn't make the playoffs and Dolan's mad about that. And then Drury was like, that wasn't the idea.
That wasn't the goal, yeah.
Right. And it's like, yeah, well, I mean, they were probably never going to make the playoffs. Like, even if you want to say, oh, they went through all this stupid bullshit this year that other teams didn't have to go through, I don't totally buy that. But, like, even if you want to say that, I don't know that you could have credibly put them ahead of, you know, Pittsburgh, Washington, the Islanders, the Bruins.
No.
I went back and checked. The odds makers over-under for them was 59.5 points, and I think they finished with 60.
Yeah.
Like,
there was no
was
way
exactly
they were going to make the playoffs in that division.
Right. Absolutely no way. But my point is, they're not going to fucking do it next year either, because now Carolina's back in their division. And the Leafs are back in their division.
Well,
or in the conference, I mean.
Yeah.
And so, like, okay, like, at best, do you think they're – because I can't see, again, like, unless PDO happens, which happens every year in the NHL, so you can't discount that. But, like, unless they get a huge save percentage or something like that, where do you see them fitting in the Metro? Yeah.
It's the same division with Boston out and Carolina in.
Right.
Which is, I think, even tougher. And plus, Philadelphia might come back to life.
Yeah, they're going to get a save next year at some point.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a very good point. And maybe that speaks to the arms race and the Eichel trade
right.
that you know, might have to happen.
Yep.
The Drury situation is very interesting. So two things on this. One, I'll put it to you guys. Do you think the letter had anything to do with Gorton and Davidson being fired?
What do you mean?
I think maybe the timing. There could have been some sort of. I mean, it sounds like they not only didn't support the letter, but they didn't even know about it. So I can imagine there may have been a phone call when that hit the wire, and maybe that got heated, and maybe that just made a decision that was coming a week later, anyways. It was this, you know, at some point somebody might have said, hey, man, you know you're going to fire me at the end of the year anyways. Just do it now if you're going to do it. And he goes, okay, and something like that.
Yeah.
There's
but I don't think they're still the front office going forward if the letter doesn't happen, it according to all the insiders who seem to know this stuff.
The echo chamber theory around the NHL after this happened was that it wasn't letter related, but that Dolan wanted to fire Gorton and JD didn't want that to happen, and then JD and Gorton are both out. He's kind of denied that through certain channels, but that might just be a classy guy trying to get out the door classily. But that's definitely the story that was circulating amongst NHL front offices after this happened. The other thing that I find really interesting, too, is the Drury part of this. Like, I only had one person tell me that they think that Drury is basically worm tongue, you know, whispering in James Dolan's ear get rid of this guy because I'm right here. But I did hear from a few people the same theory, which is that if you have somebody on your staff and you are spending years constantly saying how smart this person is, how brilliant this person is, how we can't let this person interview for other jobs, how we're going to give this person a new title and invent a job for this person so we can pay them more because they're that important to the department. Like, if the boss isn't happy, at some point he's going to be like, why the fuck don't I just make this guy the GM?
Sure.
And that could easily just be what happened here.
Yeah, and also, like, everybody spent, like, a decade going, well, Chris Drury, next great GM.
Right.
And so, like, you know, if you feel like, well, Jeff Gorton kind of didn't do a great job. Like, he's fine, I guess, but, like, he's not great. He's not, you know, getting us where we need to be. Well, why don't I get the guy that everybody has been saying for a decade should be the job haver anyway.
Give me the obit on Jeff Gorton. Like, I think
Jeff Gorton's a really good GM.
I think so, too. But he did have a lot of luck here, though. He had a lot of luck here.
Yes,
I would have him right at the top of any list of if I was the team looking to hire a GM, he would be really high up on my list. I mean, look at not just what he did in New York, where I think he had a really good tenure. Not perfect. No GM is if you're actually making moves with some risk associated, which you should, then not everything's going to work out. But I think he made really smart moves in New York. And then look what he did in Boston. Like, we're talking about, Boston's this contender. A lot of that traces back to Jeff Gorton being the GM of that team for like a month. Like, he really did a number there too. I would have him real high on my list if I was an owner looking to bring in a GM.
If you had Jeff Gorton available, what the fuck are you doing with Jim Benning? Like, honestly, what are you doing? Why are you wasting your time? There's somebody who's clearly better than him available.
A few teams that I would feel like Jeff Gorton would be an upgrade, let alone also sometimes you just need to make a change. So
it should be interesting. Now, the other
– I'm just going to say one more thing on this is because you're talking about Chris Drury and – normally, I roll my eyes whenever it's like a former player coming in. Chris Drury has done the work. Like, this guy has, as you guys said, it's been years and years and years that he's been building up to this. So I don't feel the same way that I feel sometimes when a team hires some star player. But the name to watch for me on all of this with the Rangers going forward is Mark Messier. Because he's out there lobbying for something. And Mark Messier hasn't done anything. Like, as far as gaining the experience you would need if they go and, like, God forbid, hire Mark Messier as, like, the new coach, forget it. That will be the most obvious possible sign that they are a mess there and Ranger fans should absolutely panic. A mess. Get it? I guarantee that they will be. You said the thing
Everybody's
one time.
Everybody's just clapping.
Yep.
Did it.
That will be the classic. Absolute classic.
I listened to his interview on ESPN New York with Michael Kay and LaGreca. And at the beginning of the interview, they're asking about all this shit about the Rangers. And he literally says, I don't know. I haven't been really watching a lot of hockey. So it's like, goddamn. You know he's going to get hired for some big position at this team just because he's Mark Messier. And he hasn't even done any of the – he's not done the current reading. You're right.
You know what? I respect it. Good for him. That's if he can get it to work, but that'll just
The thing that's so funny to me about that, like, people are always shocked when former players are like, I watch hockey sometimes, I guess, you know. And it's like, dude, when you retire from accounting, you're not like hanging around fucking H&R Block going, oh boy, what's going on over here?
Yeah.
It's wild. All right. The other big personnel news since the last show was a couple of coaching changes. Let's start with the easy one. New GM in Arizona, old coach in Rick Tocchet, contract expiring, team doesn't make the playoffs, and it's time to part ways.
Yeah, that's an easy call.
Pretty easy call. One name to look for here, I think, is Mike Van Ryan, who is an assistant with the Blues. Bill Armstrong used to be with the Blues. Van Ryan's a younger coach. You know, has gotten some sniffs as far as like other jobs, and would seem to be the familial, if you will, connection to the current regime in Arizona, where things could get interesting there. And obviously, a young guy to grow with a young team, because you know the whole point of bringing in Bill Armstrong is to kind of rebuild through the draft and such when they have picks, you know, to make. All right, so that's dispensed. Let's get over to John Tortorella, who's parting ways with the Columbus Blue Jackets, man. The most interesting thing I heard this week from Jarmo Kekäläinen was the idea that he's not necessarily going to find good cop now, which I think is bonkers. Like, I would go find the nicest dude who also wants to play offense and just see what that does to the team.
Counterpoint to that, anybody you hire is going to be a good cop.
That's right, yeah.
Like, what, you could bring in Ken Hitchcock, you could bring in the ghost of Pat Burns, and the players are still going to be like...
You could bring in Harvey Keitel from Bad Lieutenant and Denzel from Training Day, and they would be the better cop than John Tortorella.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a very good point. But would you agree that maybe they should rethink the system a little bit? I know Yarmo's always kind of veered towards a defensive system anyway, but like to me, it's like you've got Laine, you've got some interesting offensive players in that roster, you've got two guys in Jones and Werenski that you have to convince to stay, and also I think are you know pretty good offensive defensemen as well when they're on their games. Like, I'd love to see them hire I don't want to use D. Nevison as the template here, but you know, maybe somebody who's a little bit more forward thinking offensively and gets the team going a little bit versus trying to hire somebody else that's going to play to the crease again.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I don't understand, I got so much pushback from Columbus fans this week. Like, I want you guys to help me understand this because I really don't get...
We're here for you.
Why, like, because I was like, you know, Tortorella did fine in Columbus. You know, they made the playoffs barely a couple of times. They had the one really good year where Bobrovsky just went way the fuck off. And, you know, otherwise, like, they beat the Lightning. That's the big fucking thing that we're supposed to be like, oh, this whole 6-year tenure where they averaged like 92 points every 82 games was a huge success because they beat the Lightning that time. Like, the media, the fans, they're like, you couldn't possibly say anything bad about John Tortorella. I don't fucking get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I wish I could tell you. I've spent the last decade trying to understand Columbus fans.
They won 7 games more than they lost in 6 years.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they were like 4 games above 500 in overtime and 3 games above 500 in regulation.
Yeah. Mm. Which, you know, I mean, given what he had to work with, I think he did a good job.
Yeah, and also, like, they were like a dog shit team when he came in, but like they're a dog shit team again, right? Like that's he's leaving them pretty much exactly as he found them, except of course, well, they beat the Lightning in a total fluke 2 years ago with a bunch of players who immediately left the team.
Right. Right. Exactly. Which, you know, may or may not be torts related as the people that come and go.
There was that thing about with all the former players on The Athletic where they were like, yeah, listen, like I actually respect torts. And, you know, maybe it's more the market itself. Like the quote that is it nicer than like New York or Boston or Philly? No, of course not. Is it nicer than Cleveland? Well, sure. And it's like, oh, Jesus, maybe this was a bad idea. This whole Columbus thing just wasn't thought out well. But yeah, what? Like that's the thing I keep coming back to is like, I mean, I guess, yeah, definitely you can do a worse job than Tortorella did and, you know, given the constraints and everything. But like, how much of those constraints were him? Not just like I'm going to bench everybody and people want out, but just like in pissing off the players and feuding with openly feuding with players and then being like, hey, are you like benching this guy? And he's like, no, that was actually a different thing. And it's like, I really don't get the idea that it's like outrageous to go, yeah, he was fine, but like, that's about it. That's about it, right?
He coaches to the bubble. That's what he does. Yes. And that's why it's interesting when people are like, oh, you know, he'd be an intriguing fit for the Sabres. I'm like, yeah, he'd be great for the Sabres because they'd actually maybe make the playoffs. They wouldn't do anything when they got there. They wouldn't have cup aspirations. But when your bar is set at, like, can we make the playoffs at some point, he's the guy you bring in. He'll get you
Tortorella in Buffalo, and then you don't trade Jack Eichel.
Oh, my God.
Good God.
Well, that's the other thing is, yep, they won that series against the Lightning, right? Every other series they had, they lost in 5 or 6 games. Like, they didn't even get to game 7s, ever. Like, so, the illusion was never even really there where it's like, ooh, you know, like, I remember when you would write about, like, the pre-current iteration Colorado Avalanche, where you'd be like, okay, they made the playoffs, and then what happened? They got smoked. Right. And somebody would be like, well, look, they made it to a couple game 7s. And you can't even say that about John Tortorella's Columbus Blue Jackets. Like, they made it to a couple game 6s, and that was their big accomplishment. But, again, like, they had the 4 best games that anybody playing the Lightning has had in two, three years.
And the Lightning freaked out, and, you know, it was a bad scene. And Kucherov lost his marbles in that one game and got suspended.
Everything broke their way in a 4-game series. And because of that, we have to be like John Tortorella. There he goes, folks. The greatest coach in Columbus Blue Jackets history. And it's like, yeah, he stepped over a bar that was lying on the floor. But like,
hey, that's being mean to Claude. Wait, did Claude Noel coach the Blue Jackets?
I believe he did. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But like I just don't get it. Do you have any understanding of why it's like not allowed to say John Tortorella was a mediocre coach in Columbus?
I have a theory on this, and I'll give it to you. The Columbus Blue Jackets are a franchise that sadly lacks any identity. Their identity is that they were named after a fictitious bug. Their identity was that Rick Nash spent a few years there and was quite good before he didn't want to be there anymore. Like, what are the Blue Jackets? When John Tortorella was there, they were John Tortorella's team. And they played John Tortorella hockey, and they played blue-collar hockey. And, you know, when people would write about the Jackets, it's because Tort said something crazy in a press conference. So when you're a franchise that lacks any discernible identity, I think he gave them one. And so there's a certain amount of cachet built up around that. What do you think about that theory?
Yeah, I get that. That kind of checks out. But again, like, now the identity is, well, we make the playoffs and then get our fucking brains bashed out.
That's not fair. They also lose all their good players every 3 years.
Yeah, that's right.
You guys will notice I'm oddly silent about the Blue Jackets postseason. Just going to skip right by. I think the only other explanation I could give is I do think with Tortorella, it's probably fair to say that because of the personality, he at times comes in for more criticism than he deserves just based on his record. And if you're a Blue Jackets fan and you're used to years of hearing that this guy is awful because he yelled at somebody in the media or gave a short press conference, maybe you overcorrect to the point where any criticism feels like it's coming from that side. And even if the criticism is just he was adequate, your instinct is to go, no, he's got to be better than that. That's the only thing I can think, because, yeah, you're right. The record wise, this guy was good. That's it. That's what he was.
Yeah. Where does he go next?
God, I hope it's not the Rangers, right? Like, just the idea of this team.
That'd be a Dolan move, too.
No, it totally would be. But, like, the idea of just, like, hey, you know, say what you want about the Rangers this year. They were fun. They were often fun to watch, right? And John Tortorella's like, what if they weren't? What if they sucked to watch? And you're like, oh, no, that's true. You would do that. You would make them bad to watch. That's true.
Well, and that's it. Like, any team, and the NHL doesn't think this way, but any team that's, like, trying to sell tickets, trying to get interest in a market, shouldn't be hiring guys who coach this way. I know that winning is always better than, you know, but it only takes you so far. Like, it's, so I don't know. I mean, the only vacancies right now are Arizona, which, no, I don't think so, and Seattle, which should be a definite no. You don't go wow. into a new market and try to win 1-0.
That's right, yep.
So it's got to be somebody else that where a job opens up, and I'm not sure where that would be. He may not be coaching next year. He may not want to. He may want to take a year off and maybe do some TV, play with his dogs, and recharge a bit, and then come back at it another time.
I agree with you. You know, the Rangers looking for a coach, maybe. John Tortorella's out there. James Dolan's the guy driving the boat. I don't know. I would like pull the cover.
I would be so
nervous as a Rangers fan right now. I'd be like pulling the sheets over my face. Speaking of the sheets, today's episode Puck Soup is sponsored by Brooklinen.
Okay.
Brooklinen, yeah. There it is.
Brooklinen's great. You know, I'm wearing my Macweld Nundies. And then I was sleeping in my Brooklinen bed before. These are the people that we want on the podcast because we use the products. I can vouch for Brooklinen. The stuff is great. Their bedding is super soft. It's the kind of bedding that you walk into your bedroom and you look at your bed. It looks great. You know it's going to be super cozy. The kind of bed, as I've said, you don't want to crawl out of in the morning because it's that comfy in there. This company was started to create beautiful, high-quality home essentials that don't cost an arm and a leg. They work directly with manufacturers to make luxury available directly to you without the luxury-level markups. You get an amazing array of products. Soft sheets, plush towels, cozy robes, and comfy loungewear that you'll want to put on and never take off. They also have a 365-day warranty on their core products, and they've received over 75,000 five-star reviews and counting, which is very impressive. They also have great customer service and great, great products. Give yourself the comfort refresh you deserve and get it for less at Brooklinen. Go to brooklinen.com, brooklinen.com. Use the promo code PUCK to get $20 off with a minimum purchase of $100. That's brooklinen.com, Brooklinen. And enter promo code PUCK, P-U-C-K, for $20 off with a minimum purchase of $100. You're going to go places. You're going to look at sheets. They're all going to look pretty. But get yourself the ones you deserve at Brooklinen. I'm telling you, they're great. Brooklinen.com, promo code PUCK. The playoffs are, of course, starting this weekend.
Well,
despite the fact that the regular season continues.
Fact check.
What?
Some of them are starting this weekend.
Yeah.
By the way,
okay,
there's playoff games this weekend.
No, like he has you on a technicality there, and by extension, the league has you on a technicality there. Like, hey, playoffs start this weekend.
The playoffs
but, like,
start
is
this
there
weekend.
Any more minor? Like, oh, the NHL's a legitimate league that we should all take seriously. Okay, when does their playoffs start? Well, some of them, the games are Saturday, and some of them are a week from today. Those are.
Our old boss, Jamie Mottram, tweeted this morning. He's like, why is it so hard every year to figure out when the NHL playoffs start? And I'm just like, buddy, wait till you realize the regular season continues through the playoffs this year. It's very exciting. John Shannon said that the North isn't going to start until the 19th when the regular season's completed. Is that accurate?
That's the plan, right? And if Shannon's – we didn't even know that – the rest of the playoffs were starting next weekend, as recently as this weekend.
When the Boston game ended the other night, right? That they were like, "Oh, by the way, this series is on Saturday," and everybody was like, "Oh, okay, cool. Thanks for letting us know."
Yeah. So what's going to happen is they are going to make Vancouver finish the season, even those last three games with Calgary, which.
Well,
no playoff impact. Like I really thought maybe when Montreal clinched that the reason nothing had been said was the NHL was going to come in and go, we're not doing those last three games. But they are not only going to make Vancouver and Calgary play three times in 4 days after the playoffs have already started in the other divisions, but they are going to make the North Division wait until they are done. They have moved the last two games, the Tuesday and Wednesday games, into the afternoon. So they're literally going to make them play on a Wednesday afternoon.
3:30 p.m.
Finish the game, and then half an hour later, the Leafs and Habs or whoever will start playing the North playoffs. And so the North Division playoffs will start 4 days behind everyone else. And I guess we're just going to hope that North series are short and they can make it up and get back onto the same schedule by the end of round two. If we get a bunch of games, or if we get a game seven, then we're either going to have a really condensed schedule, or we're going to have a situation where after two rounds, there's going to have been three divisions sitting around, and then the North will have to pick up, move to a different country, find a new home, and play game one the next night. And it's just, it's immediately a mess.
Putting like the Leafs or the Oilers at a huge disadvantage against everybody else. It's fucking embarrassing.
I do not understand why the league is doing it this way. Other than I get that there could be some sort of argument that, look, Vancouver and Calgary are playing their real games, their regular season games. These aren't exhibitions, and we shouldn't. I don't know. That's where I trail off. Like, I don't get, like, just start Leafs and Habs on Saturday night. Nobody's going to be watching these Calgary-Vancouver games. You have no tickets to sell. Just put them on TV to satisfy your contractual obligation and let them play games that nobody will care about.
Yeah, and that's all it is. That's all it is the contractual obligations. And, like, I get that, obviously. But, like, I remember people were saying, like, well, couldn't you just do a thing where, like, you have them play exhibition games all over Canada in the summer as, like, a fun thing just to make up that contractual obligation? Just something so that you're not going, like, well, I mean, look, yes, do our playoffs start on Saturday? Of course they do. That's when the playoffs start. But do some of them also start five fucking days later or whatever? Well, yes, of course they also do that.
Yeah, it's not great. Looking at the series that we know are going to happen, Boston and Washington begin on Saturday. Enjoy the Preakness and then enjoy the intensity of NHL hockey. Hopefully nobody gives any of the NHL players a fungal ointment that contains a banned substance. That'd be regretful. So these guys play, and it feels like the Caps and Bruins are like two ships passing in the night, right? Like the Capitals, they're banged up. They haven't really been playing all that well. They beat the AHL version of the Bruins
barely
this week. Yeah, barely. And then the Bruins have like this Taylor Hall infusion that's given them two great lines, and you know they've got the goaltending. I mean, it feels very much like this could be a mismatch, but you know, you don't ever want to bet against the Capitals necessarily,
And it's the Zdeno-Chara series. That'll be fun. And it's Tom Wilson against Brad Marchand. Like, what more marketable matchup could you have?
Well, that game last night was so funny because, like, anytime Tom Wilson, like, looked at somebody a little bit, Trent Frederick was over the boards and in his face about it. And, like, that's... Like, Trent Frederick isn't in the same weight class necessarily, but like, good for him. He's got some guts to him.
There's a high probability that Tom Wilson is going to play the role of Nazem Kadri in the series, right?
Get suspended immediately, yes.
Yeah, like he's going to be here for about 13 minutes and then not play for the rest of the series.
I hope he like attacks Brad Marchand after he licks him, and then we're all just really conflicted. you can't do that, but
there'll be no conflict. It will be 90% of the hockey fans saying that licking is a hockey play. You know,
or all it's going to be. You know, when Wilson got that knee-to-knee hit the other day, just everybody in the hockey world doing the Jerry Seinfeld, that's a shame. You know, right, like,
exactly, or karma. You know, it's the Q rating on Brad Marchand versus Tom Wilson at this point is a mismatch. I feel like I don't feel like people would be like, who do I root for here? I think it's pretty. I think Brad Marchand versus Tom Wilson is like the Bruins versus the Canucks 10 years ago. Like, that's, we know where our loyalties lie.
Well, that's like the ultimate Brad Marchand face turn. Like, everybody's like, you know what, Brad Marchand, we love him. We were wrong about him this whole time. He's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it sounds like we're all kind of liking the Bruins in this series. I want it to be good, and I actually kind of want the Capitals to advance because of the possibility of a Sidovi, Dosi-Do in the next round. But I don't know, man. The Capitals' goaltending has been dog shit for, like, the last month and a half.
Yeah, and like, they're just not – we've been saying it for a couple of years now. It's like, you know what? They keep having good regular seasons, but they're just not that good of a team. Like, you just look at their whole roster and you go, I mean, I guess. All those guys are like 50 now. Stuff is just
really strange. I can't endorse a team with all this swirl of weirdness around it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Bruins are just like fucking rock stars again.
Yeah, the Bruins are like, oh, we just win every game 4-1. That's fine.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We're just like winning the puck line every single night now. All right. Penguins and the Islanders in what could be the last dance at Nassau Coliseum.
Feels like it's going to be, huh? Boy.
I don't know. I kind of like
look the, bad.
They do. But it's the playoffs.
And it's Barry Trotz. Yeah, I get it.
And it's anti-hockey. And all anti-hockey has to do is be one goal better than the other team in 4 games out of 7. And I think it can. I think the Islanders are going to win the series.
I can't list them as favorites or anything, but like,
no, they're not favorites.
I let me put it this way: I would be fairly surprised if the Islanders won this series. Like, I think it's totally within the realm of possibility, but I'd be like, those crazy sons of bitches did it. You know what I mean? As opposed to like, well, sure, yeah, of course,
right? Yeah, that's exactly how I feel too. But I do think. Go ahead.
Probably in the 60-40 territory.
Yeah, which is huge and hot.
Which is, like, it's huge and yet also not remotely surprising if the underdog comes through. So mm-hmm. We just got to figure out who is the modern-day version of David Volek and let him do his magic.
Moving over to the Central. Battle of Florida, baby. Lightning Panthers, let's go. It's so nasty. So already they're fighting.
That's it, man. Those last two games, they like back in the old days, if you played a team in your regular season finale before the playoffs, it was like time to send a message, time to set the tone, all of that stuff. And then like these days you're like, they won't do that. Nope, they did.
The Bruins were like, we're gonna put Providence on the ice. Like last night that happened.
Who do you like in this series?
Boy, you got to say Florida based on recent results, huh? Like, everybody on the Bolts is real banged up. Like, you know, we don't know who, if anybody, from their, you know, upper echelon is even going to be held. Like, is Stamkos going to be good to go game one? Is Kucherov? Is Hedman? We don't know.
We've thought so much about Kucherov coming back and, you know, the salary cap, and he's going to always, like, there's this assumption that he's just going to show up and be 100% fully formed MVP level guy, and maybe, but maybe not.
Yeah, and you know, Vasilevsky hasn't been very good. I took note of this last night, but I was looking at Evolving Hockey. He's dropped into 4th in goals saved above expected. Remember when he was a mile ahead of everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's 4th now behind Fleury, Nedeljkovic, and Hellebuck.
It all comes down to Hedman. And how hurt he is, what he could do in the series, I think that's the ball game. Like, well, due respect to Stamkos and Kucherov, like, I think that's the series right there.
Well, that's the other thing to say though is like he didn't get like a huge assignment this year. Like he wasn't getting the tough draws every night, like that, any of that kind of stuff. And then down the stretch, everybody's like, "Wow, he's playing like shit, huh?" And he's like, "Well, it's not because I'm hurt." And then they were like, "It's because he's been hurt for a month." And like. Well, who, like, I don't know what to expect out of Hedman now. Like, is he still hurt? Is he even going to be able to play? I don't know. And you know, obviously, like, it's in Tampa's interest to be like, yeah, we don't know either, wink. But, like, if he's been, you know, in the most recent hockey he played, he's been terrible. So, yeah. I really don't know what to think about this series other than to say the other question is, you know, who's the goalie for Florida? And if it's Bobrovsky, how short is his leash?
It's going to be the wrong goalie to start. And then they'll probably make a change to the right goalie once they're like down 2-0 or something in the series. Yeah, for sure. I still got to take Tampa in this series. I think they're the better team. I'm super worried about their health. And I'm more than a little concerned about like what Kucherov's going to look like when he comes back. But
Russian guy, I bet.
So some total of both teams. I still have to give the edge to the Lightning here, but it's I'm still undecided. There's something about the Panthers I really like in this season and in the series.
Yeah, I think the Lightning are a better team. I would pick them if I had to, but I'm rooting hard for the Panthers.
Oh.
Like this is how can you not, right? Like this, they haven't won a playoff series in 25 years. They've watched their expansion cousin from the same state win two cups,
just become
one organization. I mean, this is you can't, if you're neutral, you can't cheer for Tampa to beat Florida after all. Like this is
finally Walmart gets one over on the mom and pop hardware store. We love it.
exactly.
But what if you really want Tampa to be title town? What if you wanted to beat Tampa Bay? What if you just wanted them to win all the championships?
Yeah, they just did that.
Then I have good news for you about what happened last year.
Yeah,
exactly. I want a dynastic city. There's nothing wrong with that. Carolina and Nashville. Nashville's played pretty good. It's not just been the UC Soros show. They've played well defensively in front of them too. But Carolina's just a different type of animal. They're a really, really good team.
Yeah. Speaking of recent results, obviously they got killed last time they played Nashville the other day. But also, like, I wouldn't read anything into that at all because of they might have been playing possum a little bit.
Oh,
so
that Rod Brind'Amour playing 5D chess.
Yeah.
In this situation.
Yeah.
No, I think Carolina's just built to be like they've been building up to this season over the last few years. They play so well on both sides of the puck. They're not going to get out. Like Nashville's the kind of team that can maybe pull an upset if they're able to outwork the team that they're playing, but they're not going to outwork Carolina. They're just not.
Yeah,
Carolina will outwork almost anybody in this league.
But dude, they've got one of the hottest goaltenders in the league.
Right, and I was just going to say, and now I'm pointing to a sign that says save percentage, and that's about all you need to say in the NHL.
And that does make it kind of a fascinating story, right? Because it's in Nashville, this team that was almost out of the playoff race halfway through. Their goalie gets red hot, stays that way, presumably remains that way heading into the playoffs, and they're facing a team that is obviously better in it just about every area, but has good goaltending. But this, remember last year, right? Hurricanes were the team that they're going to go out and get a goalie. That's the last piece. And then they didn't. And they came back with the same guys. And it's not like it didn't work. Their goaltending was pretty good this year. But
really good, actually, yeah.
What would it look like if after all that they get goaltended in the first out of the first round, and they're just sitting there going, like, man, that's of all the ways to go out, we have a nearly perfectly constructed team, and we run into the hot goalie after we stick with our guys. It would I hope that doesn't happen. Predators were a great story. It was very fun. Thank you for the playoff race. Now get out of here and let Carolina move on and face one of the Florida teams in the next round.
The Predators served their purpose, which was to keep Dallas out of the playoffs. And
I think the schedule did that more than Nashville did, but yeah.
All right, so we're saving the North breakdown for like next week
when the playoffs in the North start. Yeah,
yeah. The West is interesting, just because it's not been settled yet, but. Going under the working theory that it'll be Vegas, St. Louis, and Colorado, and the Wild. Wild have a chance in that series against Colorado?
I think so. If the Avs are still a little banged up, yeah.
Yeah, they'll be underdogs, but I feel like, and I'm as guilty as this as anyone. Like we're so focused on this inevitable Colorado Vegas second round matchup that it's just like there's a part of me that's like, have we never watched the NHL playoffs before?
Right.
Do we not know we how this goes? Want. Like,
yeah.
And it's not like, you know, it's one thing to say like maybe the Blues will pull an upset. Ah, I mean, the Blues are going to be significant underdogs and deservedly so. The Wild are really good this year. Like it just feels like 2 weeks from now we might be sitting there looking at like the Wild having screwed things up and won the series and going, yeah, we should have known that was going to happen.
I think there's a chance both of these series could be upsets, to be honest with you. Like, I know that Vegas is great, but they play at a pace that I think is more favorable to St. Louis than if St. Louis was playing Colorado. If it ends up being Colorado-St. Louis, I think Colorado beats St. Louis. I think I give the Blues a puncher's chance in this series, and I also think that...
It's the NHL. Every team has, like, the most radical... Oh, my God, this is the most... amazing mismatch is like 70-30 is pretty much the best you can get to.
And then let me put this out there. I know that Jordan Binnington is not the most popular figure on this podcast. But I will say this about Binnington and last playoff. That could very much just be a bubble fuck up. Like it could just be like his head wasn't in the right place because of all the shit that he was dealing with in the bubble and the team had its own little COVID thing before the playoffs. Like all that shit was going on. And it could, like, he's a pretty dependable goalie other than that one series where he clearly lost it for the Blues.
He was bad for most of this year.
He was good the last month and a half.
Great. Perfect. Yeah, that tells you everything then.
That tells you more than fucking January does, doesn't it?
Maybe, but maybe not also. Like, you know,
Wait. We just got over effusively praising UC Soros, and you're going to tell me that, like, current results don't matter?
Well, I don't know about if I was effusive in my praise of UC Soros. I think he's a perfectly okay goalie, and certainly has a better NHL track record than Jordan Binnington does. But, yeah, I mean, I think my thing with the Blues is, isn't everybody on that team still extremely injured? Like, isn't that their whole deal?
and also ineffective in the case of, like, Torrey Krug?
Yeah, that's exactly right, yeah. So, like, I don't know. I feel like they're the team that where it's like, yeah, I mean, well, they got to the playoffs. That's nice for them. That's nice, yeah, okay. But their numbers against, I think, pretty much everybody aren't great, right?
Mm.
So,
mm-hmm. He'd have to steal a series. I don't know if he can.
Yeah.
Well, it's fun. It's going to be cool. If it's not Vegas and St. Louis, it's Colorado, St. Louis, Vegas, Minnesota. Does that change anything for you guys?
You know.
Well, I mean, Vegas, Minnesota, those were battles.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If Vegas is the best team in the league and significantly better than Minnesota, the Wild didn't get that memo because they played them really, really tough. I mean, that would be a better first round series, I think.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. The Wild did not lose to Vegas in regulation.
Yeah,
there you go.
That
Vegas
went
2-4-1. Is that right? Yeah. And both of their wins were in overtime. So
if I'm Vegas, I want no part of that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's absolutely wild that we spent the entire season being like you said, Vegas, Colorado, like these two titans are going to meet for the division title. And we end the season with two teams desperately avoiding trying to play Minnesota in the first round. It's wild.
Yep.
Oh, it's wild. It is. Whee! We should note that, you know, in the North, like, can we just get the Connor versus Austin
final?
Yeah. Like, if the NHL was ever going to fix anything, just fix it here. Like, you fucked up by not fixing the draft and keeping Connor out of Edmonton. We all know that. Fix this. Like, make this happen. How exciting would this be? Like, in any other season, we have to wait until the Stanley Cup final for it to happen because the playoff system is so stupid. But now we can get it. And how exciting would that be?
Yeah, I mean, either one of those teams would have to fuck up so badly to not make the
not make the playoff or the second round. Is it possible? Yeah, I mean, like Mike Smith could turn back into Mike Smith.
Could the Maple Leafs could the Oilers have something bad happen to them?
But yeah, like what I'm saying is, I feel like both of these things. Like if it was the Leafs against the Jets, and the Oilers against the Habs, I'd feel a little more like iffy on both those teams making it to the second round. But I guess now we're just doing the North preview, right? But
we shouldn't be. But like I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So I think, Sean, your concern, and it should be a concern, is that in the
I would have gone with existential terror. But
yeah, that's fair. We could. I mean, I don't want to parse words. Like, this would be the thing, right? Like losing to Montreal in the first round. They get back Brendan Gallagher. Their balls grow by 5x. Carey Price pitches 2 shutouts in the series. Like, this would be the thing, right, for the Leafs?
Carey Price healthy? Yeah,
of course. He's expected to be.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll see.
You're not back until you're back. But
well, that's where it's
trending.
Fill in the blank. Jake Allen, Carey Price, like, it doesn't matter. Like, the guy's going to have 2 shutouts against the Leafs in the series.
No, Carey Price gets a shutout, Shea Weber scores a goal on a point shot, and everybody goes, here we go. The Leafs will be the favorite in that series, but if you can't envision how that could absolutely turn quickly, then
yeah,
you haven't been paying attention to the sport of hockey, because not a hard script to write.
It's really hard, right, to figure out what you want in that series, because from a content perspective, the Leafs losing in the first round would be amazing, but also from a content perspective, Connor versus Austin would be amazing, like in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know what I want. I don't know what I'm rooting for.
Yeah.
Well, I know what I'm rooting for. I picked the Leafs to win the cup. I want them to win the cup. So that's, I guess, what I'm rooting for at the end of the day.
Yeah. What happens is Winnipeg rolls through that division and just...
Yeah, Connor Hellebuck gives up 1 goal in 2 rounds. Yeah.
Yeah. Pierre-Luc Dubois builds on his, Taves-esque performance of last postseason.
That's right, yep. Yeah. He's a playoff performer, proven, so...
That's what he does, yeah. All right, a couple things before we end the show. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame... inductees were named today. I mentioned this because I know Sean's a big fan of music and such. Tina Turner is in the Hall of Fame. Carole King is in the Hall of Fame. The Go-Go's. Great documentary on Showtime about the Go-Go's, by the way. I enjoyed it. They're in the Hall of Fame. Todd Rundgren is in the Hall of Fame.
Great news for Rivers Cuomo only.
The Foo Fighters are Hall of Famers. So Dave Grohl gets in with Nirvana and with the Foo Fighters, I believe.
It's the rare double inductee.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Well, I think I read this morning, Tina Turner was already in with Ike, but now she's in solo as well. And it's like,
right.
Okay. I mean, sure.
Yeah. And then Jay-Z gets in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Great,
obvious reasons. It's great. It's a solid class. I mean, I don't really understand the purpose of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Like, when I look at sports Hall of Fames, I say, this is one of the best players of a generation, or this person was super influential. Like, I guess the Foo Fighters are one of the best rock bands of the last 15 years, 20 years?
Most successful, certainly. And yeah. But I mean they're in because the first album came out in like 1994 or whatever, 95. So
are they influential, would you say? I don't know.
I can't imagine, right? Like, they're popular and I don't think anybody's like, "Oh, the Foo Fighters suck." Like, the Foo Fighters are perfectly good and they have some great albums, as a matter of fact.
I think you could argue they're influential, like, in the sense of not that they created some new genre, but they kind of took a genre that was maybe starting to lose some steam and kept it relevant to a certain audience, and that's influence.
I would say, I mean, would you say that Green Day was more influential than the Foo Fighters, to speak of a contemporary?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I would say so too.
Yeah, I mean, like, the whole pop punk thing of like the late 90s, early to mid 2000s, like, That doesn't happen if Dookie's not fucking the biggest record of the mid-90s, right? Like, that's just kind of how that goes, I feel like.
Man, it's so funny how things come around again. I was when Green Day comes around. I'm going to get so hyper young. You're going to hit me with the Steve Buscemi meme in a second. So there's a guy named Lil Huddy who's in the Hype House on TikTok.
Oh, my God.
And he, you know, as social media stars do, they all release music at some point. Like Addison Rae has an album and Charli D'Amelio did music. Dixie D'Amelio did music. So this kid put out like songs with like a band or whatever. And it's Good Charlotte. Like, like it's literally just like if you played me this song 15 years ago, I would say it's just Good Charlotte. And it's amazing how I have to remember that like a 20-year-old today grew up with the post-Green Day pop-punk, like Sum 41 Good Charlotte stuff, oh, right?
Like, I'd that'd say be sort even of their music. More, like, more Panic at the Disco.
Oh, that's a good point, too. Yeah, probably be a little bit beyond that.
Era.
Yeah, which is the which came after the Good Charlotte Sum 41 yes. shit. Yeah. So there you go. There's a through line to Lil Huddy. Very exciting. Overrated, underrated, favorite, least favorite, which, by the way, was the theme of our great bonus episode this month. If you haven't checked it out on the Patreon, we looked at milestones from the 2020-21 season, and we ranked them basically on which ones we liked and which ones we think are overrated. It's a good time. And also includes a bonus episode game show, a rarity around these parts, but a good one at that. I'm feeling a little summery. I'm like, the playoffs are here, but also the regular season continues, and it makes me think of summertime. It makes me think of all the things that people do instead of watching hockey on television. So I wanted to present two different options here for overrated, underrated this week. Activities at the beach or summer blockbuster movies?
You know I'm going to pick blockbusters. Come on, man.
Well, this was more for Sean.
Okay.
Sean, what do you say?
You know, I can Google summer blockbusters, sure.
Okay. I might have to Google it, too, to think what an overrated one would be. Do you have an overrated one in mind off the hop?
It's going to be illegal for me to say this, but any of the Dark Knight movies.
Well, I would say the only blockbuster of them there was two blockbusters, Rises and The Dark Knight were blockbusters. The Batman Begins wasn't a blockbuster. It was one of those slow build ones.
Well, I mean, on the other hand, what was the budget on that? Like a shitload of money, you know? Yeah. Like they, it's not like they made it cheap. It wasn't a fucking indie film.
Right.
I think The Dark Knight in particular is like, it's perfectly fine, but it's overrated as, you know, this profound thing. Like, it gave us the freaking Joker, and that's about it. Did.
Okay. Overrated blockbuster, summer blockbuster. I'll give you one. And I think it qualifies as a blockbuster.
He's going to say Jaws.
No. That's sacred text. I've always felt that there's a love and appreciation of the film Con Air that I've never really been able to discern. Because I feel like of those movies, and it's sort of Michael Bay adjacent, like The Rock is so exponentially better than Con Air, but I do feel like Con Air has its fans. Probably because of the actors in the movie and because it's a good Nick Cage performance. But
it's the performances. It's 100% the performances.
Yeah, but I've always felt it's overrated as a film. And fun. Yeah. Yeah, overrated as a film.
I'm so nostalgic for that movie just in the sense that it was like just a movie where they're like, we have a story and some characters and let's make a movie where stuff blows up and spend a lot of money on it, even though it's not a comic book or a sequel or anything like that.
Mm.
I miss when that used to happen. If overrated by definition, it can still be something that you like, but I feel like the movie Independence Day has become the classic blockbuster. Like for some reason it's identified as like the birth of the July 1st crazy, but and it's a very good popcorn dumb summer movie, but I don't know that it's much more than that.
Mm.
Classic yeah. movie where like millions of people die, but I'm supposed to be happy because the dog Man. Survived, and it's like, oh,
you okay. might have just fucking taken out one of my favorites right there. I love that
movie. It could also be your favorite. I wouldn't argue. Now, if you said this was the best one, I would argue that. But if you were like, it's my favorite because I was, you know, whatever, 18 the year it came out, or that's cool. I'm not trying to take that away from people. I just think that it's, I feel like if you say summer blockbuster to people, that's one of the very first movies that comes to people's mind, and that makes it a little overrated.
I had a friend named Mike Moyer, still a friend, who was in a big computer science kid. After ID4 came out, he actually went to Maryland for computer science. And he was one of the first people I ever knew that knew how to like manipulate photographs. And one of his big accomplishments was taking a picture of all of me and my high school friends at a park and putting the ID4 ship over it in an image. I just thought it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
I bet if you somehow found that image now, it would look like dog shit.
Yep.
Well, it also then, like, as friend groups do, sealed his fate of every time he ever took a photo or we ever took a photo near him, someone would reference, but you know, put the fucking ID4 ship over it now.
Yeah,
so. Yeah. And he was like, yes, I am. Absolutely going to do that.
He just has decades of photos at this point.
It's prom photos. Got the fucking ID4 ship over it. All right. So that's overrated. Underrated. I'm going to hit you with this one. June 22nd, 1988 definitely qualifies as a summer blockbuster. A movie I feel like is very much lost in time for various reasons. Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Wonderful movie.
An incredible movie, but again, like you think about like, you know, who is discussing classic Looney Tunes in 2021? You know, the
LeBron CGI. James. He's
right. That's it.
There you go. CGI has gotten, you know, so good that this type of thing would have been CGI versus it being like hand-drawn cartoon stuff. The ingenuity in creating this movie where every – like the making of this movie is almost as good as the movie.
Yes.
In how they created all these real-life objects moving in frame and then, you know, drew cartoons around them. It's a great flick.
It's unbelievable. I watched it last summer.
Yeah, it's a cultural touchstone, but I think in 2021, it's kind of like, well, who's really talking about it? So that'd be my underrated.
Yeah, that's a fucking really good one.
Thank you.
Wow. You know what? I'm going to say, well, I guess I don't know when the first one came out. You know what I saw in the summer, and so I don't know if it's a summer blockbuster, but it's a good movie? It's freaking Gladiator rocks.
Dude, I'm happy you said that. I feel like Gladiator gets a lot of shit because it won an Oscar, and people are like, fuck that, it shouldn't be an Oscar movie. But I love that movie. That movie rocks.
It's really good. I rewatched it, I don't know, 2 years ago maybe, and I was just like, yeah, this is much better. I mean, like, obviously, like, all the CGI of, like, oh, we digitally rebuilt Rome, and it looks terrible or whatever. But, like, the act, like, it made Russell Crowe a star. Well, I guess L.A. Confidential probably did that first. But, you know, it's a fucking great movie. It's certainly the first time I noticed Joaquin, I think. So.
Yeah, and you'd figure the Joaquinissance would have made this movie, you know, rise in the eyes of people, but I don't know. I think it's great. I find it to be a very rewatchable
it's,
movie.
It's hard to be underrated when you won the Oscar, but I think it fits. Like, that movie just, you sit down, the first 5 minutes delivers an expectation for what the movie's going to be, and then it's just 2 hours of hitting that expectation
delivering
out of the park.
It. Yes, absolutely.
Just one, nobody walks out of that movie going, like, that was what I thought it was going to be. It's great. That's a good pick. I'll say for my underrated, I'll go with the Tim Burton Batman, just because I thought it was a really good movie.
Oh, hell
it
yeah.
was a huge blockbuster at the time, but then it kind of these days it gets overshadowed by the Nolan stuff, and it's those movies were fine too, I thought, but if you're a younger fan of comic book movies and you've never seen that one, like it's And hugely influential, too, because, like, the idea that you could do a comic book movie without, like, bright colors and cheery, feel-good family stuff was, at the time, kind of weird.
Yes, yeah, so, a film that had a cool malign movie. Influence on the next three decades of filmmaking. Yes, we love
there's,
it.
There's that argument, yeah, that you definitely could say that. But it did it well.
I think
it was just, like, watching it, you're just like, wow, this is not what I expected, but it was a really good movie and had that cool Prince song. So
I've said this before. I think Heath has my favorite performance as the Joker, but I think the depiction of the Joker in the Burton Batman is my favorite depiction of the Joker. Gets it right.
Yeah, well, just, I mean,
the whole casting of that movie, like when you first found out that Michael Keaton was going to play Batman, like people, like. Even back then, these days, like, God, every casting decision that gets made for a comic book movie, you get all the comic book fans have got to flip out. But back then, that was the first time I was aware of, like, people being mad about something.
Actively
like
hostile, yeah.
But it worked. I thought it worked.
Well, I'm not counting the cartoon.
Yeah, I was going to, because, like...
Yeah, or the animated series.
Mark Hamill as the Joker is the definitive Joker, in my opinion.
But as a live-action Joker, like, the conception of the character in that movie with the, you know, the climax taking place during a parade he stages to throw money at people and then gas them, I mean, that's just straight out of, like, text.
Yeah, I mean, that, to me, that's a little freaking twisted, but, you know, I get...
Well, as you know, I mean, it's a faint tattoo on his forehead that says damaged.
Yeah.
All right, favorite summer blockbuster. My God, this is extraordinarily tough because there are four sacred texts in my mind when it comes to a true summer blockbuster.
You have to pick one, and you're not allowed to even mention the other three.
Okay.
No, go ahead. List your four.
Well, I mean, I don't want to steal anybody's thunder, but for me, it's Speed, which very much is a personal pick because I saw that movie upwards of six times that summer. Jaws, which is the summer movie from which all summer movies came from. And then Raiders, which is perfect. And then ultimately my choice for my favorite summer blockbuster and probably also Ryan's, one would assume, too, Jurassic Park.
Yeah, that's correct. Mine is Jurassic Park. It's a fucking perfect movie. I think those are mostly right. I would say Terminator 2 Judgment Day probably should be on that list above and beyond Speed. But otherwise, I don't know what other four you would say apart from, like, the fucking Avengers or whatever.
I got one that you guys are missing, but that's a good list. And I can't argue with Jurassic Park. That was A-plus summer. But to throw mine in there, Terminator 2. Just as far as sequels go, just as far as summer blockbusters, had the big music video, had everything. Just 10 out of 10.
Oh, yeah.
Dumb summer action movie. Just really, really good stuff.
Yeah, and, like, it's the classic James Cameron thing. I just saw Larry Brooks posted Dave Quinn out.
Yeah, I saw that too, yeah.
Terminator 2, an improvement on the original, and the original is a fucking, like, 9.5. So the fact that he was like, not only can I top it, or can I make a sequel to it, I can make the sequel indisputably better.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he did – well, I would say, I guess he didn't make it indisputably better with Aliens, but, like, Aliens is fucking incredible. Mm-hmm. And like, the original Alien is one of the greatest films of all time, in my opinion. But Aliens fucking whips, and I would never have expected that could be the case. You know, that I'd be like, this is a worthy predecessor to or a successor to one of the greatest films ever made. But he was like, no, I can do that very easily. I'm James Cameron. I'm one of the greatest directors ever made. So,
yeah. Right, least favorite for me is a pretty easy one. There are just certain movies that I find to be joyless, soulless exercises in excess. and I would have to say that the original Justice League would certainly fit that. It's a mess of a movie. The fact that Zack Snyder made a 4-hour cut of a movie and it ended up being better than what they released in theaters is kind of miraculous. I hated Justice League so much.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah.
Do I have to pick the Avengers just because of what it did to the movies? No, I'll pick any one of the Harry Potter movies that didn't come out at Christmas, because, boy, there are a lot of really bad Harry Potter movies.
Which ones do you think are terrible?
Oh, most of them? I think...
Compared to the books, or...?
What?
Is that compared to the books?
I've never read the books. Okay. I think Prisoner of Azkaban is good. I think the first, like... I can't remember the order in which they were released, but the first two definitely are bad. I think a big chunk of that franchise just like isn't that good, even if I like a lot of the people involved. But yeah, I'll go with a Harry Potter movie. Most of them aren't good. Oh, wait, when did The Crimes of Grindelwald come out? Because that one sucks more than any.
Oh, that one sucked really bad, yeah.
Crimes of Grindelwald release date. Let's see. I feel like that's a December release, maybe, in my head. November release. Yeah, it sucks, so not a summer movie. But anyway.
What do you say, Sean?
I was gonna say Phantom Menace, but I have to be honest, I liked it well enough when it came out. And I don't want to start that whole debate again. I'll go with Wild West, Wild Wild West. Just because at that point, like, Will Smith had just broke up. That was back in the after Independence Day, and then Men in Black, and it was like Will Smith owns this weekend. And the movie's going to be really good, and the song, the video, and everything was fantastic. And you're like, you're all hyped for it, and then it just really doesn't work.
Have never seen it
on any level. Yeah,
never seen it. My whole life.
It's good not call. Very good. It's
yeah,
not very good. All right, well there you go. Full trip around the old summer blockbusters. That is Puck Soup for this week. Thank you everybody for joining us. Any last words on Quinn being canned while we did the show?
I don't think it is a surprise, and I almost said earlier, like, I'm surprised they haven't done it yet. I mean, I know Drury's just been on the job, but I mean, okay, season's over, time to make up your mind. So I'm not surprised, and the Jack Eichel connection was kind of intriguing, but...
Well, that and, Quinn and Drury both went to BU, undoubtedly know each other from that. Like, I figured there were those rumblings right away that was like, they're pretty tight,
actually. And also, a lot of times a new GM likes to have the lame duck coach for a year to buy him some time.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to play that card. Yeah. So it wouldn't have shocked me, but I think it's certainly, put it this way, out of Davidson, Gorton, and Quinn, if somebody was going to go... Quinn would have been the one that I would have had easily first, second, and third on my list. So if the other two had gone and he had stayed, that would have seemed odd to me.
I think the answer on firing Quinn is about time, right? Like that's probably something they should have done a year ago, but they didn't for whatever reason. And, here we are a year later, same spot. So.
Clear the decks for Torts, folks, right?
Oh, let's go.
John Tortorella, Timmy Panarin and John Tortorella, the sequel.
Yeah, Panarin's like, trade me wherever they trade Jack Eichel also.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We will join you next week. Take care.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.